Welcome to the Pregnancy Help Podcast. I'm Christine Gribbett. I'm here with Jarell Godsey, the president of Heartbeat International, and our special guest, Monica Snyder. She's the executive director of Secular Pro-Life. And Monica is here to give us some insight on the findings of the Turnaway study and help us understand some of that content a little more. So we'll get into that in just a bit, but I'd like to start by mentioning that Heartbeat International's Academy provides a wealth of training opportunities for staff, volunteers, and board members of Pregnancy Help Organization in the form of imprint materials, online courses, and in-person training, such as our upcoming annual conference. We continue to offer new coursework on topics such as leadership, client care, fundraising, and more. So head over to heartbeatservices.org to find out more on those opportunities, or email us at support@heartbeatinternational.org. So Jarell and Monica, it's so good to have you on today, and I'll turn things over to you.
Thanks, Christine. I'm really excited to have Monica join us. I was actually at the March for Life, walking down the street, and amidst, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people, I see Monica. I'm like, Monica! And she's like, she was so gracious to say yes to the opportunity to be on with us. Now, Monica, you are the executive director of Secular Pro-Life, which most of the people in the pro-life movement really come from a faith-based perspective. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, which you point out so elegantly and effectively, the truth is on the side of pro-life and not fully dependent on a faith perspective. So give me your elevator speech on that understanding.
Sure. Yeah, so I'm an atheist and I'm the executive director of Secular Pro-Life. It's run by atheists, but I want to emphasize you do not have to be an atheist to be involved. We work with all kinds. Part of our organizational mission is to build interfaith coalitions of people who are interested in advancing secular arguments against abortion and helping us make space for what I call non-traditional pro-life people. People ask us all the time, well, what's your position? And often they are a little surprised to find it's not very different from the position of people of faith against abortion, because I find that most people of faith, their position against abortion isn't necessarily based specifically or solely on their religion anyway. So our position is that first we need to recognize the biological reality that human organisms, as organisms, we begin as zygotes. This is not an opinion. This is not a religious belief. It is just a biological fact. And in the realm of biology, when we're not talking about politicized debate like abortion, it's not contested at all. That's not the end of the debate. You hear pro-lifers all the time say, biology says life begins at conception, therefore abortion is wrong. There's more to it than that. You have to get into philosophy also. But then we engage in the philosophical debates about, well, when are human organisms people? When are they valuable human beings that merit rights? I definitely don't have time to go into all of that right this moment. But if you go to secularprolife.org/abortion, we give an overview where we talk about some of the more common personhood arguments, especially stuff to do with cognition and consciousness, and what is it that we value about human beings from a secular perspective, and how should we apply that to the abortion debate? So I like to explain, especially to pro-life Christians, that sometimes they'll ask us, you know, well, why should an atheist care at all in any context? You know, sometimes they think that if you're secular, if you don't believe in God, then you don't believe in morality. That's a huge mistake. Also a huge other conversation. But from my experience, the secular abortion debate is not why should we care about human beings? The secular abortion debate is which human beings are we holding in consideration and why? So secular people already care about human beings as a baseline stance. I'm trying to get more people to realize that that should include even before we're born. That's where we're coming from. And then the other thing I think is really important to say very briefly, pro-lifers need to be prepared to engage bodily rights arguments. It is actually not enough to establish the biology of humanity and the philosophy of personhood. You still need to be able to engage the bodily rights arguments and narrowly the right to refuse. It's not I can do whatever I want with my body. It's no one can use my body against my will. We have to be prepared to address that. And again, secularprolife.org/abortion, we have a whole section where we do address that. We believe that when you take apart bodily rights arguments, they actually don't come even close to justifying abortion, not even close. But you have to be able to understand what the other person is saying and engage them where they're coming from. It's really important.
Thanks, Monica. That's a long 1 minute elevator ride,
but I'm not very good. Appreciate elevator pitches.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons I so enjoy having Monica both as a friend and a fellow pro-life leader. And also, she is a great follow on Twitter or X or Instagram or wherever you can find her, because they have great stuff. She puts out stuff herself, and I really appreciate it. Kind of helps refine and train me as well to engage in certain things that I don't find myself in nearly as often as you do. So I'm grateful for your voice on that. But you recently did a presentation on the Turnaway study. Now, I have been in conversations about the Turnaway study and had never heard some of the things that you have pointed out. And so I'm like, Monica, you have got to come and talk to us about this because I feel like the Turnaway study has kind of been used as a bludgeon against the pro-life community. In fact, and I've heard people say it's bad science, and I know that the study has some issues that we could, but sometimes it's too easy just to. It's too ineffective just to try to dismiss a study for its methodology or whatnot. However, you bring up some really good things. So let's talk about first, what is the Turnaway study? And then here's the key that it isn't known for, because there are some things it's not known for that I'm going to unpack for just in a minute.
Yes. So for anyone who doesn't know, the Turnaway study is when they went to various abortion clinics and they talked to women who went to those clinics and got abortions, and they talked to women who went to those clinics intending to get abortions but were turned away, hence the name of the study. And they were turned away because they were past the gestational limit at whatever clinic they were at. It could have been 12 weeks, it could have been later. And the researchers followed these two groups of women who got abortions, women who were turned away from getting abortions over approximately 5 years, and measured the outcomes after that. I think the study was originally put together to answer the pro-life claim that women regret their abortions and women are mentally harmed by their abortions. But what's interesting is now it's more often used to discuss what happens when women seek abortion and are turned away. It's a very, very famous study. They have their own website where they, in the website, they summarize parts of the study, and they also have a section where they try to track how often news articles reference their study. And there are hundreds of news articles over years referencing their study, and almost always in the exact same fashion. So their study is really well known for a couple of key things. First, early on, it was well known for finding that women who got abortions 5 years out said it was the right decision for them given the situation at the time. It said they did not regret it, said that both positive and negative emotions about their abortion decreased over time, and that was the first finding that was heavily, heavily covered. Now, as you mentioned, pro-life people and pro-life organizations will respond to this with disbelief. Sometimes they'll talk about what they think are methodological flaws in the study, and you can find people discussing things like attrition rate and sampling error and all those things. I'm staying agnostic on that. I think that's a debate worth having, but I don't think it helps us that much because, first of all, it's too confusing. It's too complicated. People don't know that much about best research practices, and it's hard to keep track of. Second of all, it sounds defensive. And third of all, to be blunt, pro-life people just do not have as big of a platform as the abortion rights side. So even if we were absolutely correct about all of the methodological problems, we don't have a stage from which to say, hey, this is not right, because all they have to do is say, yes, it is. Bam, the end. And I don't know how to grapple with that problem, but I don't think we need to approach it that way. Because the study also has its own findings that I think really kind of undermine the entire pro-abortion narrative. So the study is used, I'll back up again. The study is used to say women don't regret getting abortions, but it's also used, especially in a post-Dobbs world, to talk about how the real harm is done to women who are denied abortions. And it will talk about how the women who were denied abortions had worse financial outcomes than the women who were able to abort. That's the main focus by far, but sometimes they'll also talk about other metrics. One I've seen occasionally is saying that women who gave birth when they couldn't get an abortion struggled to emotionally bond appropriately to their children compared to women who had abortions and then had different children later. And so the overarching narrative of the Turnaway study, and if you go to their website and look at their database of hundreds of articles, this is what they're all talking about, is women did not regret aborting, and women who couldn't get abortions were harmed. Abortion was liberation, abortion denial was subjugation, and they'll talk about clinical expertise and research-based, evidence-based. If you just want the science says that this is what happens when you prevent women from getting abortions. That's the general gist of the Turnaway study. So several years
Well,
ago, I was.
isn't that more like the top line messaging of the Turnaway study?
Yes, the top line
Yeah.
messaging, the well-covered findings of the
There
Turnaway
you go.
study. Now, when to call it a study is a little bit confusing, because what it really is a body of data that they have used and analyzed in different ways. And so they have many peer-reviewed publications in different journals looking at different aspects of the study. So when I say study, people imagine one single paper. It's actually a bunch of papers. They do have a book summarizing it, but you could call it a bunch of studies or one study. And this is important because when their paper came out about women who were denied abortion. Okay. They had a paper about women who denied abortion and whether they bonded to their children. And I remember at the time when I was reading it, even though I'm pro-life and I have my own opinions, just from a scientific standpoint, if you're doing a scientific study, you're supposed to have a test group and a control group. The test group is the group where you are altering some kind of factor or having some kind of circumstance that you want to see how that circumstance affects them. And the control group is where you don't alter anything so you can compare. You have to have a control group or you have no idea what you're looking at. It's basic research. So they have the test group, which is the women who get abortions. They're trying to look at our claim that women regret abortion, right? They have the test group of women who get abortions, and they ask them all these very specific survey questions over years about their feelings, about their emotions, relief, anger, happiness, sorrow, whatever, and regret, and what you think of this. I understand them asking that. From a scientific perspective, you're trying to test, do women regret abortions? This is what you're going to do. You're going to ask them. What was curious to me at that time, and I didn't feel any one way about it, I just noticed it. I thought it was strange that they didn't ask the women who were denied abortions about their feelings, because that's the control group. You're supposed to ask them all the same things, basically. I didn't think a lot of it. I just thought that would have been interesting if they had asked the women denied abortion what they thought, but apparently they didn't because they don't mention it. So then fast forward, I'm reading some Vanity Fair. I'm not even sure. I think it was Vanity Fair. Some article about the Turnaway study, and buried in the, 11th paragraph is a passing mention from the journalist saying, well, it's true that they also found that women denied abortions also didn't regret it, but that's probably because of this, that, and the other thing. And I don't even care what her explanation was. I was just wondering where she saw that, because I looked for that. I specifically looked for that, and I didn't see it anywhere. At the time, I was only a volunteer with Secular Pro-Life. I had a full-time job and kids and all these things, and I didn't have time to figure it out. But I messaged one of our other volunteers who's this little smarty, super good at research, and I just sent her this Vanity Fair screen cap, and I said, what is she talking about? I didn't see that. Can you find that for me? And she did. It was in the book. You have to buy the book of the Turnaway study. And so I bought the book myself just to make sure it was true because I couldn't believe it. And it turns out in the book, they talk about how, of the women who were denied abortions, the ones who gave birth, 96% of them ended up saying they no longer wish they'd aborted. And I thought that was just remarkable, because it completely changes the context of this discussion. If you're saying that basically everyone who aborted and everyone who couldn't get an abortion ultimately ended up being accepting their situation, it doesn't necessarily mean anything about whether abortion should be legal or not, but it very much changes the narrative about abortion denial ruining women's lives. And so in my, cynicism, I was frustrated because I thought they hadn't published this. So I went to look again. I couldn't find a peer-reviewed publication mentioning this anywhere. The reference in the book was to a conference presentation that we can't access on the internet, right? And then I ended up writing it up, and one of our followers, another smart academic type person, he said, "Hey, I found the publication." It turns out the publication had just come out a year or two later. And so I downloaded the publication, read the whole thing, and sure enough, they don't say 96% of women ultimately said they didn't wish they aborted. They say 4% still continue to wish they aborted even 5 years later. That's how they phrase it. So you can't open the publication and search 96% and find it. You have to read through it and do the math. But I thought this was remarkable. I couldn't believe I had never heard about it. And since that time, that was a couple of years ago, I've mentioned it many, many times through Secular Pro-Life content. And by far the most common pro-choice reaction is that I'm lying. And they say that's not what the Turnaway study found. The Turnaway study found that women don't regret abortion and women who can't get that are harmed by it. And I said, it found the things you're
Top-line
saying.
messaging, also top-line messaging.
Yeah,
Not
but it also found
the
this. And then they'll say to me, go to their website. You can go to the Answers website. It's ANSIRH. Answer is the organization with the researchers that did the Turnaway study. They have a website about the Turnaway study. They have this whole multi-page document, like summarizing all the peer-reviewed publications they've had on the Turnaway study. And in fairness to them, they do list it. It's called Emotions After 5 Years of Abortion Denial. They list it in the list, but the paragraphs describing the basics of the research don't mention it ever at all. And they also have separately, they have a handout. It's 2 pages long that's summarizing the effects of abortion denial. And it also doesn't mention it at all. And I know this because I have pro-choice people calling me a liar and they'll cite these things like, look at their website, look at their summary. It doesn't say anything like that. And I say, you're right. It doesn't say anything like that. And yet, that is what they found. Do you think that's weird? Is that weird? So that's the
Mm-hmm.
biggest one. If you take away nothing else from this podcast or from discussing this with people, it's that they found that women who gave birth after abortion denial overwhelmingly said they no longer wish they'd aborted. And to be more specific, they even said that they retroactively viewed their abortion denial as a positive event, and they cited bonding to their child as one of the reasons. If you read the actual article that they published about this specific, the emotions after abortion denial, they quote some of the interviews, and there was one woman saying, she cries sometimes when she thinks about it. She can't believe she ever thought that she would want to abort her precious son who she loves so much. Okay. So, this is the kind of life-changing love and bonding they're describing. And what's interesting is they completely dismiss this finding. Not only do they not have it in the website, not only do they not have it in their summary sheets about the study, but you won't find it mentioned. Usually, it's not even hinted at all. Usually, they don't even raise the question of how did the women who were denied abortion feel? They just talk about the feelings of the women who aborted and the finances of the ones who didn't, and they don't even raise the question of how the ones who were denied abortion feel. And so then there, I was surprised, a year or two ago, there was a columnist in the New York Times who did an opinion piece where he directly addressed this issue. And he said, you know, the Turnaway study found that these women overwhelmingly ended up, you know, bonding to their children. I forget how he phrased it, but he directly focused on this finding. And the lead author of the Turnaway study, Diana Greene Foster, objected so much to someone addressing this that she wrote a letter to the editor complaining. And she basically said, and you can read it. She basically said, yes, it's true we found that, but that's not the most important thing. The more important findings are these other findings about harm. And I thought that was very telling because if you're an objective researcher, you're not deciding which findings are the most important findings. You just present the findings and let people conclude what they will. Also, I thought it was very telling because presumably when you ask these women 5 years after their abortion denial whether they still wish they'd aborted, they know what their financial circumstances are. They know what their credit score is. They know whether they're still living with their parents. All these things that have been more difficult for them than if they didn't have a baby at that moment in time. They know that. And they're still telling you they didn't wish they'd aborted. Who are you to say, well, your love and relationship with your child is not as important as the fact that your finances were worse? How dare you? I say this as a woman who's had children in very low-income circumstances. We used state assistance for many years, and it was tough. And I would be outraged if I was talking to someone about how I love my kids and they were like, yeah, but if you hadn't had them when you had them, wouldn't you be better off? No, I don't think that I would. And I don't think it's your place to tell me that I would. It's trust women until they are glad they didn't abort. And then it's like, well, they don't really know the full scope of how their life could be.
So
So.
that's a fact, and it's something that we know through pregnancy center work directly. One of the most challenging things for any director that's putting on an event for donors, where they really are going to have that client that's going to be willing to stand in front of a group of strangers and say, "I was planning to abort this child I now love and care for," right? There's a it's a unique individual that will do that and not have gone through some level of what that study finds out, which is they regret even thinking about it. They don't want to have that as a memory that I was thinking about killing this child who I now love beyond life itself and I would do anything for. They don't want to remember that. So it's no surprise to us for that finding to be identified. I'm grateful for you, Monica, to kind of point that out and for her, this whoever this brave reporter was in the New York Times to do the same.
The chilling thing is that I think, and I'm not going to presume to speak for all pro-choice or abortion rights people as a monolith. I recognize that they are not. But there is a subset of people who support abortion rights who, you know, they don't view an embryo or fetus as a child. They view the entity as something else. It could be a clump of cells or it could be a not yet child, whatever they view that entity as. And that profoundly affects how they interpret what I'm talking to you about because the lead researcher, Diana Greene Foster, has talked about how, you know, if you don't get an abortion, this could become a child, basically. And that's a tricky thing. But she talks about how women who did get abortions, many of them went on and had children later, but the way she phrases it and frames it, you can tell that she thinks of it as like an interchangeable thing. Oh, you didn't have a child right now, but you can just have that child later. And I'm like, sorry, that child? That child? You can have a child later. Some people just think of it as like a reset button. And so she talks about, so that's why she compares, part of their research compares women who aborted and then had a child later to the women who had children because they couldn't get abortions. And right off the bat, from a pro-life perspective, you're like, that's not really a comparison. I remember one of the first times I started engaging the Turnaway study was when Foster wrote a summary piece in some article talking about when women are denied an abortion, their children fare worse than peers. That's what she said. And I was thinking, well, their peers are dead. Their peers were aborted, so they don't fare worse than their peers. But in your mind, those don't count. In your mind, you're just comparing them to the next children. And I think the title is very telling to the mentality. So the other thing I did want to touch on really quickly, the main thing is the women who were denied abortion not wishing they'd aborted. But the other thing they talk about a lot is the worst financial outcomes. Women who couldn't get abortions had worse financial outcomes than women who aborted. And that is true. They found measures of greater financial distress, but what they don't mention is it was initially true. And then what they find is as the study goes on for 5 years, by the end of the study period, most of the metrics that they're looking at converged, meaning that the women who got abortions and the women who had children when they couldn't get abortions, by the end of 5 years, they had similar household incomes, they had similar personal incomes, they had similar levels of full-time employment, all these things. So when you read the articles describing this, they will say for the first few years or 6 months after abortion denial, this what's it look like? They'll couch it with a phrasing about how long it is. And I don't want to belittle that. Temporary poverty is still important, you know? But all parents know that having a child is more expensive than not having a child. That's not a remarkable finding. And what is more remarkable to me is the fact that most of these financial metrics converge by the end of the study period. They did one paper that found most of them converge, and they did one paper that found that a lot of them were never different to begin with. They looked at all these different metrics of credit scores and debt and all these things, and they found some differences that resolved before the end of the study period, but they also found a bunch where it was never different to begin with. And they don't report it that way. They don't report all of the findings of what was similar. They just find anything that was different and amplify it. That's all they do. So, same thing with looking at child well-being. They found a whole bunch of ways in which the children born when their parents were denied abortion did not differ from children born subsequent to parents getting an abortion, having children later, different, milestones in development, whether they were likely to be breastfed, whether they were likely to go to the NICU, all kinds of things. They just basically mostly didn't find any differences. The Turnaway study largely finds that women who aborted and women denied abortion all end up saying it was the right decision for them 5 years later, and that mostly there's not many differences between their children and between their financial outcomes. There are some differences. I'm not saying there aren't any. But when you read the articles talking about the Turnaway study, they hyper focus on the differences. They don't mention all the ways they were the same, and they don't mention the temporary nature of most of the differences. And they never mention that in spite of those differences, these women say they no longer wish that they had aborted. They never mention that.
Well, isn't that though a testament to really the resiliency of women, the power that women are able to overcome situations and make a better set scenario than they're in at any given point? Like, is that's I mean, that's the natural human effort, right? Is to overcome the obstacles that we face. And women are quite capable and exceptionally capable, I would say, even as a man. I think, that's one of the powers of that women have is to overcome those circumstances to make things better, whatever circumstances they're finding in. And that goes to the temporary nature of the conversation. Pregnancy is temporary. Yes, child rearing is expensive, more expensive than not, but it is still something that can be overcome and has been overcome for millennia.
And this is something I would imagine that people who work in the pregnancy help side of the movement are well aware of from personal experience anyway. So the interesting thing, important to that audience in particular, we say 96% of women no longer wish they'd aborted. That implies 4% either said they weren't sure or said they still wish they'd aborted. And people will bring that up. 5 years later, you've got at least some people still saying they wish they'd aborted. What is that? It's very interesting because the Turnaway study found that women who had strong social support were significantly less likely to say they still wish they'd aborted. And women who placed for adoption were way more likely to say they still wish they'd aborted. I think both of these are instructive to us. I believe sometimes adoption is a beautiful option. It's the most loving possibility that you have. But I also think that in many, many cases, the best thing we can be doing to help people is to empower them to parent their own children. And it makes sense to me as a mother that if you birth this child and then you get to develop your relationship with them, all the good of that relationship will start to offset the stressful circumstances under which you had them. It makes sense to me as a mother, and I've never placed for adoption, so I'm speaking out of turn, take it with a grain of salt, but it makes sense to me that even if you believe placing for adoption is the best option, it means you won't get to have that same level of relationship and good offsetting for your personal direct experiences, offsetting the stressful circumstances. So I was not at all surprised when they said that women who place for adoption were way more likely to still feel, you know, regret and to still wish
well,
it
we
gone
know,
differently.
We know that from some of the studies that came out of the late 90s, early 2000s. I think you can find that in Birth Mother, Good Mother, right? The FRC kind of compiled some of that right brain research that really talked about the idea that in an abortion, you have the death of the child. If you keep in front of the child, you have the death of the life that you imagined without the child. But in an adoption, you really have both scenarios. You have two deaths.
Oh.
In the psychology of the woman that's considering that. So again, that what you're identifying in the Turner Way study is not it's not incongruent with that. It really follows on that she doesn't know what happened. We don't know more about the actual adoption scenarios. You know, was
Sure.
it fully open? Was it fully kind of engaged, or was it more distant? So some of that realities are probably being reflected in that 5-year moment that they're identifying.
Exactly. And I think it speaks to the crucial importance of both the pregnancy help side of the movement and whatever efforts different individuals and organizations are doing to just reform society in general to be more supportive of people. Because the other thing we do need to acknowledge is that despite the fact that many of these financial outcomes converged over time, not all of them did. In particular, women 5 years out who had their children instead of abortions were more likely to still be reporting that they struggled to cover basic needs than women who had aborted. So a lot of things were resolving. Things were getting better. You're getting to the age now where kids are starting to be in school. Maybe you can go back to work. It's a familiar song for parents with young children. But there's no denying that having children is more expensive than not having children. And when people weren't prepared for it, that's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. And that's where we can step in and make it less hard.
Well, agreed. And that certainly is part of the pregnancy help movement. It's part of the pregnancy help effort. You know, now that we actually have life states, as well as abortion states, you know, it's going to be incumbent upon those political leaders to create policies that do better at that. Don't you think it'd be interesting? You raise a really interesting, fascinating point. Identifying them at the 5-year mark is really identifying them right as their child is about to go to school, is about to be. Yeah, where there's more, even more help coming in as far as the,
right.
you know, the idea of having gainful employment elsewhere, whatever, comes also with the school age years.
Yep.
Wouldn't it be interesting to have a 10-year
Oh, I
look
think
at
we can
that?
predict.
Yeah.
I think we can predict pretty well. So, yeah. So the other thing is they looked at maternal bonding. This is important. They found that women who were denied abortions, women who had children when they were denied abortions, were more likely to struggle to bond appropriately to their children than women who aborted and had children later. That is true. That's what they found. Now, what they actually found was that 97% of women who aborted and had children later bonded normally, and 91% of women who had children when they were denied abortion also bonded normally. When I tell people that, they're very surprised. And by the way, this is not just a pro-choice talking point. I hear pro-life people, and I think this is a big mistake, talk about women who have children when they can't abort as if they are going to be bad mothers, as if CPS should take their kids away. How could you want to kill your kid? That is a mistake. I don't think you are understanding the psychological situation here. We find that overwhelmingly, women who have children when they can't get abortions parent the children themselves, bond normally to the children themselves, and say they no longer wish they'd aborted. Our side needs to recognize that. I bet pregnancy help probably sees it more easily than people who aren't as plugged into that side. But all that to say, when they did measure maternal bonding, they measured it when the child was up to 18 months old. The reason I bring this up is because when they measured, do you still wish you'd gotten an abortion, they did it all the way up to about 5 years out. And they found that even from the first birthday to the 5-year mark, more and more people said, no, I don't wish I'd aborted. Like the number kept dropping. So I think it's reasonable to, we don't know for sure, but it's reasonable to speculate that the women struggling to bond maternally would also keep dropping as time goes on, as they adjust, as their children get older, as they have more help. The other thing is, and I haven't found the peer-reviewed publication of this, but they also found that there was no difference between the women who aborted and the women who were denied abortion in terms of how they measured their life satisfaction. That the women who were denied abortion measured the same life satisfaction. So again, this narrative of abortion denial causing these horrific, unfixable harms, that's largely perpetuated by the Turnaway study. If you actually read the whole Turnaway study, they found that overwhelmingly people said they no longer wish they'd aborted. They had the same life satisfaction. Their financial situations converged over time. They overwhelmingly bonded normally to their kids. It's smoke and mirrors. There's so much in there that reaffirms what we've been saying, which is that abortion denial is not going to ruin your life, and it's going to save your child's life. So,
Well, someone told me one time who is a PhD, but when he was going through the PhD effort, he said, Jarrell, he said, the professor told me that we read these studies and documents and whatnot, so you don't have to. And Monica, you have read the Turnaway study and deciphered it for us. I feel like you're a PhD in the Turnaway study, and it's just I could listen to more of your analysis on this. And again, it's great to know that you're a part of this movement, a part of the pro-life effort, and really bringing valuable addition to this. And I appreciate your time with us today. And I appreciate that you are tackling the Turnaway study. So one more time, just let us know where we can find more good information that you guys are producing at Secular Pro-Life.
Sure. If you go to secularprolife.org/index, that's where I'm trying to organize all of our content to respond to different pro-choice talking points. If you go to secularprolife.org/index and just keyword search Turnaway study, we have a bunch of content there talking about all of this and more.
Grateful for that. We will certainly include that in the show notes. And again, I can't encourage you enough. Secular Pro-Life is a great follow on X or Twitter or Instagram or wherever you can hear Monica talk more so elegantly and excellently with these subject matters, these and others. So I really appreciate you, Monica. Thanks for being a part of our podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you both. Again, thank you, Monica, for digging in deep on this topic and shedding some light for us. And you had mentioned secularprolife.org/abortion. So I'll link to that as well. So our listeners have some really great resources that they can continue studying this topic and understanding the great resources that you guys have to offer. So thank you for that. To our listeners, be sure to subscribe. We'll have more content coming your way. And thanks for listening to this episode of the Pregnancy Help Podcast.